Okay, sorry for that delay. So tonight we hopefully finish the seven habits. Anyone need more handouts?
Last week.
Last week I don't have right.
Okay, no worries. I'll do the post-graduate
question. Okay. Okay, so we're going to do the last two habits. The sixth habit is really a continuation of habit four and five, because the way the seven habits work is that the first three are independence, as we said. It's about the type of person that we are, that we become. The habit four, five, and six is about interdependence, how we relate to other people, how we use the first three habits, to better our relationships, to make it more effective, to resolve conflict, etc. And then the last habit is what we call sharpen the sword, so how we get used to maintaining and sustaining all of the habits. So, habit six is what we call synergy. Last week we talked about the habit of thinking win-win, developing a mindset. A mindset of moving away from the competition script and rather thinking in a mindset of win-win. There's some extra handouts here if you want. That was habit four. That was last week. And then we also moved on to habit five, which was seek to understand and then to be understood, which essentially is the habit of communication. In other words, Habit four is about developing a different mindset. It's really, the three habits are really three parts of the same process. We explained that every relationship must have difference, it must have conflict. It's actually good. It's a good thing for growth. It forces us to think creatively. And it makes us access stronger and deeper parts of the communication. So in order to do that, habit four was about developing a whole new mindset of relationships, because it's really moving away from our ego, moving away from technique, from manipulation, and really using the first three habits, which is being able to have the strength to make decisions, being able to have the strength to create a vision, a goal that is value-centered, value-based, principle-based, rather than people-centered, as we explained the first few weeks, and develop a mindset of win-win. In other words, move away from a competition script, as we explained last week, and move towards a mindset that when we do have differences, we can come up with a solution that is win-win, that is actually good for both of us. Even though initially a person could look at that as a weakness, but when we work in a way which is more principle-centered and value-centered, then we actually see that as a strength of character to make room for both of us, to accommodate both of us, and we start to develop a mindset of a win-win mindset away from the competition script. In order to do that, we need to move into a communication mode, which is real communication, meaning not just talking, but real communication, which is based on seek to understand and then be understood. And as we explained last week, that's the most difficult, probably the most critical thing to do, but one of the most difficult things to do. To really understand the other person's perspective, really understand the other person's world. And in order to do that, one has to really shut down. One has to completely negate one's own ego and listen to someone else in a proper way. And we define listening not as when you listen to someone, you're formulating a response, but listening means to really listen, to completely shut down your own world, your own perspective, your own view, your own opinions, your own way of thinking, and for the time that the other person is talking, to really zone in completely to what they are saying and understand it completely from their world. As bizarre as their world might be, even if it's absolutely crazy, but they have a perspective. Everyone has a perspective. Everyone has a view. And therefore, the concept is to be able to completely move away from my world and try and understand their world. One of the reasons that it's so difficult, first of all, it's a difficult thing to do because it's not a natural way of doing things. And secondly, the reason that it's so difficult is because it's a risk. I just wanted to highlight that again. It's a risk because actually we might actually change our opinion. We might actually see it their way. We might actually move away from our own position, right? And therefore, it's a risk. But if we have real strength of character, then we're prepared to do that, because we're prepared to make room for a different view, a different world. Just want to share with you a little cute story about seeing something and understanding communication from someone else's world. Just a cute story I saw once. Told about a rabbi by the name of Rav Abele, the chief rabbi of Vilna. And it says that he was sitting once in his house with surrounded by students, having a nice, informal, lively conversation. And they were interrupted by a knock at the door. And the knock at the door was a young girl, dressed in very simple clothing, obviously a servant in someone's home, and entered and approached the rabbi. And she said to the rabbi, "Sorry for bothering you, but I have an important question." And so he said, "Of course, answering questions is my job. It's one of the important things I do." So she said, "Rabbi, what should I cook tonight for dinner?" Right. So, and she did it in absolute seriousness. So the students started to just laugh. It was like ridiculous, a comedy show. So he gave them a very, very stern look, and suddenly they got the message that they had overstepped the line. And they started to listen to what the rabbi would respond. So he looked at her and he says, without any sarcasm, without any attitude, he said, "I think you should cook noodles." Right? So she thanked the rabbi for his advice, and she left. When she left, the students couldn't believe what they'd just seen. So they said to the rabbi, "What just went on here? I mean, obviously you understand something we didn't understand. Like, what did she ask? And why did you answer? What was that?" So he said like this. He said, "It's obvious from the way she came in that she must be a domestic helper, a servant in a wealthy family, right? She obviously was a bit of a naive soul and a trusting person. And what happened was, probably, I just imagined from a question, that she went to ask the mistress of the house, she went to ask her, what should I cook tonight for dinner? And she was obviously impatient. She thought, you know, her boss must have thought that it's about time she takes a bit of initiative. So with sarcasm, her boss must have answered her, "I don't know, why don't you go ask the rabbi?" And she took it seriously, and that's right, and she went to ask. So without embarrassing her, I wanted to actually put her at ease, and I answered her question, and she left. I just tell that story because it's an amazing skill to be able to listen to someone's question and understand right away where they're coming from. That was obviously a stupid question. It was a ridiculous question. It's not the kind of question. I mean, you're welcome to ask me the question. I can tell you now, you won't get an answer because I wouldn't have a clue. But it was an amazing insight, yeah, an amazing thing, just to right away on the spot understand the world from where a person is coming from to be able to answer the question that way. Right? So that's the habit number 5, to really understand the person's world. But the habit says, and we emphasized this last week, that the habit is seek to understand and then be understood. And this is the key, really, because a relationship must be two ways. And therefore, when you first seek to understand and you really understand the other person, the chances are, very good chances are, that the person will then feel understood. When a person feels understood, then they don't feel judged. When they don't feel judged, they can open up. Then you can have an equally reasonable expectation of being understood as well. So when you really seek to understand, then you can also seek to be understood. And that's a reasonable expectation. So as part of a conversation of difference, or a conversation of dispute, or a conversation of challenge or conflict, the technique is first seek to understand, really understand, and then you're able, then you're in the position to be able to be understood as well. Once that happens, then you can move into habit 6. And habit 6 is synergy. Now what Stephen Covey calls this is, it's the habit of synergy because it's the habit of creative cooperation. And basically it's the practical outcome of habit 4 and 5, which in turn, of course, are based on habit 1, 2, 3. So let's understand what this is. Whenever there's a difference, right? Whenever there's a different view, whenever there's a different perspective, whenever there's conflict, there's 3 things that can happen. The first thing is, as we spoke last week, that everyone can remain locked in their position. Of course, that's a destructive outcome because the dispute continues. The relationship spirals downwards very, very quickly. It's working off a competition script, so it's either win-lose or lose-win or lose-lose, as we spoke about last week, which is really a disaster. And even if we win the war, but we lose the battle, as the saying goes, right? So no one ever wins from a competition script. Even if one person wins, but they win by force, they win through manipulation, no one's happy, the relationship doesn't win, the relationship doesn't thrive, the relationship is not nurtured through that process. The second outcome, the far better outcome, is an outcome of compromise. Okay. Now, people always talk about compromise in the relationship about being a good thing. Now, compromise is a good thing, and it's certainly a lot better than dispute, right? Now, we know even in Jewish law, when two people come for litigation, and there's an argument, and they come before a rabbi, and the rabbi has to judge the case, or a court, a Beit Din, whatever, we know that the first thing we have to suggest is compromise. Like, you want to have a compromise rather than going settlement, a compromise, right? Because what a compromise does do is, at least it strengthens the relationship at some level, right? It demonstrates a willingness to give up something. It demonstrates a willingness to move away from egocentricity, to give up something for someone else, to accommodate a different world, a different view. So a compromise is much, much deeper. It's a whole lot better than being locked in sort of a competition and position sort of thing. And sometimes compromise is necessary. You know, I don't know if any of you were there when I did a course on relationships on Thursday morning, but we spoke about in relationships there's what I call, what I refer to as there's things we need and things we want. Right? What's the difference between things we need and things we want? The definition of a need is something that we cannot do without. Right? Or at least we perceive that we cannot do without. The problem is when people have too many needs, that's a problem. But a reasonable need is something that a person just cannot do without. Right? A want is something that you can do without, but it's something you would like. It's good, you enjoy it, you want it, but it's not absolutely critical. Now often in relationships, there's a conflict between two people or a tension between two people. So it's really quite a simple formula. Sometimes you have someone's need conflicting with someone's want. I just can't think of an example offhand now. But let's say it's something I need, but it goes against what someone else wants. So the reasonable thing to do is when there's a need versus a want, the want gives in for the need, right? Normal thing. Because if I can do without it, but you need something that you can't do without, so then I give that up. And that's not such a problem. But the problem is when a need conflicts with a need, right? So two people have needs and they both perceive it as being something very critical and the one conflicts with the other. And that's when you have to move into compromise because someone's got to give up something. And so sometimes each one gives up a little bit and the needs are then met or they're compromised and they move forward. So compromise is a great way to go. However, compromise, as great as compromise is still very limited. Because what compromise tells you in a relationship, it's still a certain mindset. It's a mindset of being on opposite teams. Okay? And that's the problem with compromise. Compromise means that you're still on either side. Someone still had to give up something. I still don't fully relate to your need. Your need is still not my need. We're still on opposite sides of the fence, but we're in a relationship. We're both intelligent people. We both realize that to remain locked in our positions will just destroy the relationship. So we, as intelligent, mature human beings, we understand that to move forward, we're going to have to give up something. We let our ego go a little bit, and we compromise. Compromise is we give up something. Right? So we still have a position, you see. With compromise. It's just willing to give up on it a little bit. But our positions still remain very different. What this habit is about, the sixth habit, which he refers to as synergy, is going to the next level. is going to the next level where we create a culture in a relationship where actually it's one team. Where the principal whole is much greater than the smaller parts, right? Why? Because when you have a win-win mentality, but more importantly, when you really understand and then you are understood, and that relationship is important to you because it's part of your values based on the first three habits, then suddenly it's a whole different mentality. Then your needs become my needs and my needs become your needs. And it's not a matter of compromise anymore. Because then, rather than compromise, you look for what he refers to as a creative alternative solution that meets both needs in the best possible way. Because no one actually is giving up anything, because both people's needs are as important to each other as to themselves, as their own needs. Because they really understand each other, and the relationship is built on real values and real principles, and it's really important that they build this bond and become one team. So you understand what I'm saying? It's a whole different culture. It's a whole different mindset. But it's a mindset that can only become possible with habit 3, 4, and 5. Only when you have that mentality, that mindset, that there is a thing called win-win, where you're willing to operate on a less egocentric level. And it can specifically only happen when you really understand the world of another. Because as long as I don't understand your world exactly, in other words, as long as I was still linked to my world when I was listening to you, your need will never become as important as mine. To me. Because I don't understand it. Because if I'm still linked to my perception, I'm still linked to my reality, then how can I understand your need? Fully. I can understand it from afar, from a detached position. But I can't really internalize it, because I don't really understand it. I don't really understand it because I never left my world. You follow? Once I do leave my world, as we spoke about last week, I shut down completely, and I focus totally on your reality, and then you do the same. Then we really understand each other's world, then we can make each other's needs our needs. It's a hard thing to do, but that's the process.
But that's scary, because you can exploit the other person. Because you understand them so much, you've got so much ammunition against them.
Why is there ammunition against them?
Because you've exposed yourself to another, so...
Well, you see...
And they know how you think because you allow them to come and enter your inner chamber, and they've been on your side, then they'll know how to even manipulate you even further.
Well, that's assuming that the foundation of the relationship is not healthy. You see, last week we spoke about all this stuff is based on, we called it a
trust.
Not an investment, sort of, like an investment account of an emotional investment, an emotional bank account, that's what we said, right? Relationship bank account, that's right. Right? Where there is mutual trust and there's respect. I mean, every relationship has to be built on certain foundations for this to happen at all. Right? This is beyond. This is we're talking about the relationship starts off properly, and it starts off on the proper healthy principles of respect and love, etc. Right? And then inevitably there's difference and there's dispute and there's conflict, then you can go ahead with this. Obviously, you wouldn't meet someone in the street and you wouldn't take a relationship, let's say a work relationship of one day because someone just was employed and you happen to know them for 5 minutes. You're not going to completely open up your world to them, I understand that. But nevertheless, it can be on a whole different level. But a relationship, ultimately, a true relationship, must be one of true understanding, otherwise it doesn't mean you have to open completely up. It means in the context of what you're dealing with, you have to fully understand. It doesn't mean that you have to open up your entire world to them, because not every relationship that's necessarily healthy. But it does mean within the context of this discussion, or in the context of this difference, there has to be a full understanding, otherwise you can't move forward.
I have a question.
Sure, please.
This principle is great, but what if one of the parties, they themselves don't know what they want, they assume they know what they want, and today they want this, tomorrow they will want something completely.
Sure. It's a very good question. I think the answer is this. Obviously, these are general principles, right? There's no rule that says that we can't negotiate, right? There's no rule that says that I can't suggest to you that maybe what you think you need is actually not good for you. Now, particularly, for example, let's say a parent and child. My child might have a need that actually I don't think is good for them, right? So that can certainly be part of the discussion, only on the same basis when I really understand them. You've got a lot better chance. See, to talk someone out of their need, let's say you really believe what's wrong with it, right? You see, because when we talked about last week about seeking to understand them, you understood. When you fully understand, it doesn't mean you fully agree. Okay?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you fully agree. But it does mean that you fully understand. Now, you might then decide to actually initially to respectfully suggest that they change their thinking, right? If you do that before you've understood, then it's a very threatening exercise and you won't stand a very good chance. And normally it doesn't happen. So when you do it after you've understood, then you stand a much better chance because you do it genuinely. You do it because you really understand. In other words, I really understand where you're coming from, and let me suggest an alternative. Okay? So there's two, you're right, so there's two possible outcomes. One possible outcome is, when I've really understood you and you've really understood me, then we can talk about it. We can discuss. We can communicate. And we might suggest something. We might, because we said one of the risks of fully understanding is you might actually lose your position. And that's fine. So then we don't have a conflict anymore. So you're right. After habit 5, there might not be a necessity for habit 6 sometimes. Right? Because sometimes when two people really understand each other, one of them actually realizes, I actually understand you more than you understand me, or I actually agree with you now, so we don't need to go further. The conflict dissolves, right? Or through communication and discussion, the conflict dissolves. But it's only possible in a genuine way if we fully understood each other. But then sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes we still have genuine needs, and they're different. And therefore we need to go to habit 6, which is, now that we've properly understood each other, to actually find a creative solution. But I think there's a very powerful hidden message. When someone feels understood, it's a lot easier to get them to understand. Yeah, I think that's the principle. So I'll show it to you like. Sorry, you want to say?
I can't find it, but somewhere along in the course it says something, the end goal should be
kept. Yeah.
So with this, even if you fully understood but really still don't quite agree, is it a compromise? Is it giving up if you, in view of the end goal that you want?
Okay. Sure. You'll remember that when we talk about win-win. So Stephen Covey says that it's win-win or sometimes no deal. Right? Sometimes we have to agree to disagree, and sometimes relationships have to part, and sometimes, for example, in parenting, there's a certain responsibility that a parent has to educate a child. If that's the goal, and it's a value-based goal, then sometimes the parent has to exercise authority, and that's fine. Sometimes you have to accept, correct. Yeah, correct, because it's exactly to fully that involved. But it's a lot healthier within that context rather than just giving up. But it's also because it's one team. You see, when you, sometimes in parenting, you have to accept because it's your child and you love them unconditionally, and therefore, you know, because you're on the same team, you accept certain things because it becomes important to you. But it's a lot healthier when it's done not in a compromise way, when we still on opposite teams, but we're working toward the same goal. In that, perhaps the solution might be we give up something or we have to compromise something. You're right. It's not always practical to look for an alternative solution, but it's a great mindset, and therefore sometimes it does really help and you can become very creative. Right? Stephen Covey gives a very sort of simplistic example of this, right? Which is, I'll share with you and then sort of just so you understand what this means. Talks about a conflict between husband and wife, and he says it's vacation time. So the husband wants to take his family out to the lake country because he enjoys camping and fishing. It's important to him, right? He's been planning it all year. He wants to spend time with his kids. They all love going fishing with him. It's a fantastic thing. So he's made reservations at a cottage on the lake. He's arranged a boat to rent. and his kids are really excited. He's got sons, and they're really excited. The wife, his wife, she wants to use a vacation time to visit her ailing mother, who lives 250 miles away, right? She doesn't have the opportunity to see her very often, and it's really important to her. So there's a conflict. He wants to go fishing, very important for bonding with his kids. She wants to go visit her mother. So she says, he says, listen, the plans are in plan. It's really important. We've been planning this for a long time. We have to go fishing. So she says, but we don't know how much longer my mother will be around, right? And I want to be by her. It's the only opportunity. We don't get another opportunity, etc. So it goes back and forth, right? She's got a sister. He says, why can't your sister take care of her? She says, yes, but I want to be, etc. It goes on and on. It starts to be a conflict. Is my mother less important than your fishing? You know, is your fishing more important? No, your mother is important, but spending time with the kids and in a context which they enjoy is very, very important as well. It's perhaps more important than you spending time with your mother. It becomes a conflict, right? So there can be three outcomes. One can be a positional outcome, which is disastrous and will never be resolved. There could be a compromise. They can give up something. They can decide to split up. She can decide to go visit her mother alone. He can decide to take the kids fishing. It's a compromise. They've both given up. They're both not happy. They both want to spend time with the entire family, but it's a compromise, right? Or they can move into a different mindset. Again, this is a simple, most scenarios would be a lot more complicated than this, but just to give you an example of what this is about, right? And they can, but they'll only move into that mindset when they've really understood each other. You see, when people start with the positions, can you imagine initially in the conversation, she thinks that her husband is absolutely off his rocker. I mean, this is her mother. The mother's so important, respecting her mother, etc., etc. And he's talking about fishing. Okay. He, on the other hand, knows that the mother-in-law is taken care of. He doesn't have a problem with his mother-in-law. He gets on very well with her. She lives very far away. So he doesn't have a problem, but he knows bonding with his kids is the only opportunity he has. He doesn't understand where his wife is coming from. So they start off not understanding each other. And that's where habit 5 is so important. Because if they really listen to each other, they will begin to understand each other. When they begin to understand each other, each one's needs will become the other one's needs. That's the punchline of habit 5, where your needs become my needs because I so understand them. So when they listen to each other, suddenly he really understands the importance of going to her mother. She really understands the importance of the fishing trip because they really understand each other. It's a very, very difficult exercise because starting off from where each one thinks the other one is absolutely crazy and absolutely wrong, getting to the point where they really, really understand each other is a difficult process. But once they're in that mindset, suddenly they begin to think all differently. Suddenly they begin to think creatively. He gives examples like maybe there's a fishing resort right next to the mother, right? Something, a simple thing, maybe they never thought of before. Maybe they can do both. Because suddenly it becomes important to both of them to achieve both goals. Because both needs become important to both people. It's a different way of thinking. As I said, it's a simple example, and it's an example where maybe the creative alternative solution is a simple one, and not all situations are as simple as that. But it's just an example of a mindset. When that mindset kicks in, the whole thinking is different. It's much easier to move away from the position, understand each other, and then come up with a whole different solution. Because it's a one-team approach. Because both needs are important to both of them. And that essentially is habit 6. Okay. You know that thing we spoke about last week about the principal and the parents with the attention, it's the same sort of thing. If they really understood each other, if they had a win-win attitude, they moved away from the position and thought about the goal. And to both people, it was important the education of the child. And if they would really understand each other, then to the parent it would be really important that the child sits at attention as a consequence for misbehaving. To the principal, it would be also really important that the child goes to the sports game because he really understands where the father's coming from. And then they'll just automatically move into a win-win mindset and come up with an alternative solution where they both agree that the child needs the detention but can do it at a different time. Just a different way of thinking. But again, the point of this whole exercise is that to be able to move into this type of thinking, you have to be have a lot of strength of character. And that strength of character comes from the first three habits. And that's why these habits are all linked. Okay. Yeah. Win-win is the mindset. They're really one and the same thing. But win-win is just, let's think of a situation where we can both gain. Now, how do we do that? First of all, we communicate and really understand each other. And then we apply that by coming up with a creative solution. Win-win is just to have the mindset to move away from the position. Right? So, can we come up with a situation where we both win? How can we do that? By understanding each other and then coming up with a creative solution that meets both our needs. No, it's not a compromise. Synergy is not compromise. Synergy is creative solution where we're one team, but it's the practical application of the win-win mindset, which was made possible by the understanding of each other, which is habit 5. They're really three parts of the same process. Which then leads us to habit seven. And habit 7 is a very, very important habit. By the way, these three last habits can work in every conflict situation because every issue in relationships has to do with conflict, essentially, right? It has to do with different perspectives. And difference.
Indifference.
Or indifference, yeah. But okay, true. But indifference is also a conflict. You're right, obviously, relationships, the other foundations of relationships have to be nurtured, like bonding and communication, etc. But in terms of difference with people, most tense situations, most complicated situations come from conflict. And therefore, just developing this mindset is a whole move. It's a whole different way of thinking. And then you don't need compromise. You don't need mediation. You don't need all these other things because it's a whole different mindset, which comes from the inner strength of character, which comes from the first three habits.
You need both parties to play by those rules.
You're right. I'm going to put in the air conditioner for a few minutes because it's very, very hot in here. That's a cool
thing.
Go on.
How do you convince the other person that this is the game they should be playing?
You bring them to the course. No, I am.
Give them the book. But they're not actually losing.
I think. Yeah.
Playing.
It's a very, very good question. And you're right. It's a big problem. But I think the answer is something I mentioned throughout, and I mentioned this last week as well, and alluded to tonight, and that is when you slip into this mindset, it inspires others also. It doesn't always work. And sometimes you have to part company, and sometimes you have to agree to disagree, and relationships don't always work. That's true. Right? But it's like the story of the Kotzker Rebbe that I told you. When you change yourself, you change others. When you work on your circle of influence rather than your circle of concern, your circle of influence widens. And when you understand other people, they tend to start understanding you. Right? I think a lot of times when we ask that question, and it's a good question, it's because we are a little bit still in the mindset of focusing on the area of concern rather than the area of influence, where we've laid the blame with someone else. This goes back to habit 1. Not lay the blame completely, but I'm saying subtly, right?
No, just each person takes responsibility to the
right.
Functioning
So what we normally find is that when we take responsibility fully for ourselves and only focus on the area of influence, then the area of influence widens and we're normally able to bring the other person over. Not always, and it won't always work, but there's a much, much better chance. Yeah. Okay, so the final habit, and it's a very, very important habit, is this. Final habit, Stephen Covey refers to as sharpen the saw. Sharpen the saw, he takes from a very cute example, analogy. He says, when you walk into a forest, and you see someone chopping down a tree or sawing down a tree, and they're working really, really hard, making very little progress. And the guy is exhausted and he's panting. And you say to him, why don't you take a break? And while you're taking a break, why don't you actually sharpen the saw so that it'll be able to cut better? And the guy turns around to you and says, sharpen the saw? I'm too busy cutting down trees. I don't have time to sharpen the saw. Right? Like someone says, I'm too busy driving, but I haven't got time to fill up on gas. So it's bizarre, but this is the crux of this habit. Everything we've talked about, will be absolutely useless unless we dedicate constantly, every so often, time to rethink it, to go through it again, to make sure that we develop the inner strength to be able to apply these principles. Right? I once had an interesting conversation with someone I was involved in school, and we brought a very, very top expert on behavior management, which everyone who ever taught will know that's a very difficult area of teaching. Brought a guy, I've forgotten his name now, one of the famous Australian guys who comes to schools and he gives a whole day seminar on good techniques and behavior management. So this guy comes and he was very funny and very entertaining and he gives a brilliant seminar, charges a fortune. And then I was on the executive, so lunchtime we actually went into a room and we had lunch, just me and the principal and someone else were sitting at lunch. So I turned to the middle of lunch and I said to him, I want to ask you a question if you don't mind. I said to him, what are the statistics? How successful are these seminars? Like, a real, answer me like, you know, tell me the honest truth. How successful, what's your feedback from schools? How successful are these seminars? So he looks at me and he says, this is not good for my career, but I've got to tell you the truth. The success rate of these seminars are very low. I said, why? He says, because what happens is I go into a school, I inspire teachers, they think it's wonderful. They come up with these brilliant ideas, and they're all gung-ho at the end of the day to implement all these new ideas. The next day, they're going to class, the first kid mucks up, everything goes out the window, the pressure's on, they go back into the routine of whatever they normally used to. After 2-3 days, they've forgotten anything that we've said, and it all comes to you. So I said to them, that's great, thank you. I should have asked this question a few weeks ago, but anyway. So I said to him, so tell me what does work. So he says, I'll tell you what does work. It'll cost you more money, but I'll tell you what does work. He says, we have a program called the mentoring program. When we go into schools, we teach teachers what to do. We then go into the classroom and observe them. We come back a few days later. We pull them out of class for half a day. We retrain them. We reflect on the ideas. We keep on going back to it over a good few months, and that's what works. Because if we don't take off time to re-energize, to focus on becoming a strong person, to develop the strategies and the strength to be able to implement these 6 habits, it doesn't happen. And let's understand why. And this is what we're going to say now is crucial, because if we don't internalize what we're about to develop, really the whole thing is pretty useless. We have to understand a few principles, 2 principles mainly. First principle is as follows. That to implement these 6 habits is not easy. Whether it's the first 3 of independence, whether it's the second set of 3, which is interdependence, it's not easy, right? It's a shift of focus. It's leaving our ego behind. It's making choices. It's finding the inner strength of character to be able to do this. It's very, very difficult. Now, it's true that it's all built on the principles that we started off the very first week, and that is that we have the ability to take responsibility. We make decisions on how we respond and how we behave. That is all true, right? But because we have that ability to make those decisions, because we have that ability to make the choices, it doesn't mean that it's easy, okay? You know that in Judaism, there's a fundamental principle called free choice, right? The Torah says that every human being has free choice. But if you look at the verse that describes free choice, we find an interesting thing. It says the following. It says, God says in Deuteronomy, it says, Re'eh, have a look, he says. I place before you today life and death, good and evil. I place them both before you, and you shall choose life and you shall choose good. Okay? What does this verse actually tell us? It tells us 2 things. It tells us that we have the ability to choose. It is the ability of the human being to choose life, to choose morality, to choose good. But it also tells you that it's not easy, because the choice isn't easy. Why isn't it easy? Because God says that I place before you both. You have in front of you a real hard choice to make. There's the tempting, short-term, transient, what seems to be the easier option, the more enjoyable option, the pleasurable option, the more egocentric option, of negativity, which sometimes seems much easier to choose than the right choice. And it's placed in front of you, it's staring you in the face. And yet God says you have the ability not to choose it and to choose something better. But they're both there. Right? So, sharpening the saw, this habit means to ensure that we're nurturing our character and we're strengthening ourselves to the point where we are able to make the right choices. At all different levels. We'll soon see this. What this means. Right? We have to ensure that we have the strength, that we are strong enough in every situation, because we are always faced with these things. We always face with dilemmas. We face with people who provoke us. We face with the choice to get angry, not to get angry, to be dishonest or to be honest, to give up or not to give up, to be negative or to be positive. Right? To remain positional and locked into our ego, or not to be, or to let it go, or not to understand or to understand. These are all very difficult choices to make. So we have to make sure that we have developed a habit where we are strong enough, where we're able to develop the strength that when faced with our situations, we will be able to make the right choices. Okay. We'll come back and develop this soon, but let's just develop something else in a second. That's the first principle. The first principle, again, is that there's a choice. We can make the choice, but it's not an easy choice. It takes a lot of strength. The second principle is to understand that the war is never won. Now, this might sound initially like a bit of a morbid principle, but let's understand it. In the journey of life, life is a journey that actually we never reach the destination. We only reach the destination once. That's at the very end. Right? Because the purpose of living is to grow. And as we've said before, growth comes from challenge. Right? So it's not like we can learn a habit, make a choice, and then we're in cruise control for the rest of our life. It doesn't work like that, because the challenges become different, the conflicts become different, the differences become different, and there's always that challenge. So the inner struggle to make the right choice is something that is going to be, we have to accept that. It's something that is going to be there always. There's two interesting principles in the Torah. It says, when God created the world, we say the world was created in 6 days. Right. If you look at the 6 days of creation, every day, except for Monday, which is a separate reason for that, it says that God saw that whatever he had created was good, ki tov. Right. It doesn't say it on Monday, because Monday the job was unfinished, so it says it twice on Tuesday. Okay, so it's got twice on Tuesday, one for Monday, one for Tuesday. So it has that Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then Friday. Friday, it says, in conclusion, God had a look around, so to speak, and he saw that whatever he had created, the whole thing, vihine tov me'od, it was very good. Not just good, but very good. And the Talmud has a bizarre expression, seems to be a bizarre expression. It says the Talmud, what does it mean, tov me'od, what is very good? It says the Talmud, very good means the yetzer hara, the evil inclination. What is that supposed to mean? What is very good means that we're given a challenge, given an invitation. But the answer is what we just explained. That very good means, real growth means, that there's ability to overcome a challenge. And that's why in conclusion of the whole creation, when God completes the whole creation, he says, and he saw, that whatever he had made, it was very good means that there's a challenge, and there's an ability to overcome the challenge. Right? You know that there's another expression in the Talmud that goes like this. It says, what's the difference? It needs to be understood contextually, but in the Talmud it says the following. What's the difference between someone who serves God and someone that doesn't serve God? So the Talmud said that someone who doesn't serve God is someone who revises what he learns 100 times. Someone who does serve God is someone that revises what he learns 101 times. What does that mean? So the commentaries explain the following principle. I mean, when someone is able to revise what you've learned 100 times, that's pretty good. But in ancient times, Talmudic law was all taught orally. Right? There was no written books. It was all taught orally. So standard practice, standard habit was when someone went to a lecture, he would revise it 100 times to make sure you remember it. People were used to it. That was standard practice. So the Talmud says anyone who remains with standard practice is not considered a servant of God. Because to remain locked in your habit, as beautiful as it might be, As wonderful as the habit is, that's not growth. It's like physical fitness. If you challenge your fitness today and you become fit, and then you're still doing the same level of physical activity 6 months from now, that's not growth. We always have to challenge that fitness just a little bit, right? So therefore, the Talmud says, who is someone who serves God? Someone who can revise their learning 101 times. That ability just to go beyond what you're a little used to overcome a little bit of a challenge, that's growth. That's satisfaction. That's real achievement. Right? That's the payoff.
Can you get another struggle with a higher bar next time?
Correct. But the payoff is that you're growing as a human being. You're becoming a better person. You're becoming a stronger person. And therefore you achieve more. Well, it goes to habit too, doesn't it? I mean, you got to start with the end in mind. It depends what how person you want to pass on. Right? I mean, yeah, if we believe that existence has no purpose, then we might as well just enjoy life, right? Forget about anything. But if we believe it does have a purpose, and the purpose is to bring morality down to the world, to bring holiness to the world, to make ourselves and the world a better environment, then it's through growth and through values and through real morality. And that comes through real growth, which is constant. Right.
Why are you here today? Right. It just seems to be a constant ongoing onslaught onto your...
Well, I mean, onslaught, yeah.
How you are, the bigger the challenges you get, then you just think...
No, it's not bigger the challenges, it's different challenges. It's different challenges. Always challenge... There's a Talmudic, there's a Torah principle that God never challenges a person with what they can't. It might be hard, but they always have the ability to overcome it. In other words... A person is always given the challenge that is right for them at the time, right?
Just so you can develop a bigger muscle, so next time you get an even bigger challenge.
Correct, but the bigger challenge is not a bigger challenge, it's just a different challenge relative to your current level of fitness, spiritual fitness, right? But if that's purpose of existence, if our existence is to be a better person and to have good relationships and to have deeper relationships and to have bring deeper depth into the world and goodness into the world, then that's what happens, of course. It's not a morbid thought, it's a very liberating thought. It's the ability to keep on growing. Yeah.
So we're all here to grow.
Right.
We're all doing it anyway.
Correct. That's exactly. You're on the right page. Right? So, but what this does mean, however, is the point I wanted to make in the second point is this: that because the struggle is constant, because the challenge will always be there, that's why the seventh habit becomes even more important. We need to develop a mechanism that we always have that spiritual strength, or that emotional strength, the psychological strength, even physical strength, to always meet that challenge and to always be able to grow. And that's why we have this crucial and critical habit of sharpen the saw. And sharpen the saw means on many levels. And what Stephen Covey says is, and we'll develop it from a Jewish perspective, is he talks about sharpening the saw on four levels: physical, mental, spiritual, and social environmental. Emotional, so socially emotional. Right? Physical is a simple thing. A person needs to be physically strong. You know that a person, for example, I mean, you all know this, I imagine, that when we're worn down, we have worse tempers, right? If a person decides they're going to make a choice not to get angry, or to get angry less, the chances are doing that are much higher when you're physically strong, right? And therefore, a person must be able to devote some energy, some time, some investment to their physical health. We know from a Torah perspective, the body and soul have to work together. There's an interesting little saying in Jewish sources that a small hole in the body creates a very big hole in the soul. Because from a Jewish perspective, we learn that God gives us, puts us in this world with a body and a soul and have to work together. They are married by force when a person is born. And they have to learn to cooperate and work together. Right? This type, the habits that we've gone through, these are soul habits. These are emotional, psychological, spiritual things that a person does, decisions that we make, choices that we choose. But they all have to work through the body. They all have to be expressed through the physical manifestation of the physical body. And that is, of course, only possible when we're physically strong. And that's why sharpen the saw means that a person has to be able to take off time. And many people neglect that. They're always doing good things, always running for other people, always giving up time for other people, but they never learn to say no, they never learn to devote time to themselves, and devoting time to themselves in this context is not a selfish thing. It's not an egocentric thing that I want to be selfish. On the contrary, it's because I want my relationships to be better, because I want the way I relate to other people to be more meaningful, because I want it to be more effective, because I want to be able to have the mindset and the clarity to resolve conflict in a proper way, I need to be able to devote time that I don't get worn down, and that's sharpening the saw on the physical level. The second is the mental and the spiritual. What does that mean? There's a couple of principles. We go back to the very first principle of making choices. These habits, many of them are built on the principle that the mind rules the emotion, right? It's a principle we call in Hebrew, Moach Shalit Al Halev, that the brain rules the heart, or should rule the heart, can rule the heart, right? For that to happen, that's a difficult thing, however, you see, because normally what happens is the way we respond to various situations, emotionally we respond much more quickly. Our emotions are more instinctive. However, we possess the ability for the mind to rule the heart. How does the mind rule the heart? The mind rules the heart because the mind ultimately makes the decision. If we have time, we have focus to think about something, we're able to intellectually, cognitively make a choice which then can steer the heart in a particular direction, even if it's different to the instinctive direction of the heart, right? However, to do that, one has to feed the mind. The mind has to be constantly fed and the mind has to be constantly clear. And that's why sharpening the saw means that we need to do a number of things. A person must dedicate time to revisit these principles. Someone asked me once about my Thursday morning thing that we do on personal growth. I said, like, it's an interesting thing. Every Thursday morning you come and you do a session on personal growth. Like, how much can you talk about the subject? How long do you plan to keep doing this? I said, until I retire. Sure, we're going to revisit some of the principles again. And we're going to come back to some of the same topics again and maybe, you know, package them a bit differently maybe. But that's part of the process. Part of the process is that, you know, you've come to a course like this. These are things we need to keep on doing. It's like parenting. I know as a parent, often, you know, I attend many, very often parenting seminars. You know that when you go to a parenting seminar, you come away a lot of times and you actually haven't learned anything new. But it doesn't matter. You feel very refreshed, very refocused. Why? Because the mind has to be constantly fed. These principles, you don't revisit them, they lose, because we move very quickly. Because the challenge is always going to be there, and because there's always new challenges, it's very, very easy to slip back into old habits, slip back into old mindsets. Because in order to have these new mindsets, it requires a constant focus of the mind ruling the heart. And the mind ruling the heart, therefore the mind must be kept constantly alert, and therefore sharpening the saw also means constantly revisiting that concept of the mind, feeding the mind. You're getting a bit cold there. Compromise.
No, that's
good. Okay, that's right. We need time to reevaluate. There's a concept in Jewish thought, a very, very critical concept called cheshbon hanefesh. Cheshbon hanefesh means a time of reckoning. In the Jewish system, there's a concept of every night thinking back throughout the day, every month thinking through the month, and particularly once a year, you know, before Rosh Hashanah, before Yom Kippur, to think about the year, because it's a mind exercise. Because if we don't dedicate time to do that, then we just keep on going. We keep on the treadmill of life, and we never actually stop and think, okay, how's it going? How are we actually applying the principles? How much did I improve in this last period? What do I have to still work on? What's my next project? What's my next emphasis? What's my next focus? Right. And then also sharpening the saw on a mind spiritual level also means dedicating time to talk to other people. You know, support is a very, very important thing, right? There's the teachings called the Ethics of the Fathers, Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot has wonderful lessons in living, etc. So one of the things it says there is that it's critical for every human being. It says, appoint for yourself a mentor, like a spiritual mentor, and acquire for yourself a friend. Okay? It is so important that a person doesn't keep all this to themselves, because when you share with others, you discuss with others, people support each other. Therefore, part of sharpening the saw is to develop time to share things with other people and to discuss these concepts with other people. I read once a beautiful little story about a great Hasidic rabbi called Reb Chaim of Tzanz. And he told this story before Rosh Hashanah one year about he was inspiring his followers to improve, to reflect, to make amends, etc. So he said, he told a story about a person that was lost in the forest. Totally lost. He wandered for weeks, going back and forth, and every path he took just was a dead end. He just couldn't get out. One day, he met another person that's lost in the forest. So he was so happy, he says, "Oh, I'm so happy I met you because I don't know how to get out of here." The guy says, "Not so fast, I'm also lost. Right? So I'm not sure if I can help you because I'm just as lost as you are." Suddenly the first person says, "No, you're right, but you do help. Because what we can do is as follows. I can show you all the paths that I've taken that haven't worked, and you can show me all the paths that you've taken that haven't worked. And then we can know what path not to take, so we stand a much better chance of getting out of here quicker, right?" So he told them, that's the concept. You know, we don't have to reinvent the wheel, but sometimes when we take time of getting together with other people, discussing these concepts, talking to people, finding out how they work, what works for them, what works for you, support each other, help each other, that's all part of sharpening the saw. This takes time. This actually takes conscious effort to dedicate time to do this. It might be, for some people, it might be reading books on personal growth. It might be attending things like this. It might be thinking about it. It might be revisiting one's notes. It might be listening to a CD. Whatever the case is, but a person needs time to feed the mind and to continuously refocus to get reconnected and refreshed in terms of applying some of these principles. And that's why we also need time. That's the third, that's the sort of the final concept of sharpening the saw, that concept of social and emotional. Sharing with others, sharing challenges with others, and making sure that we can develop that focus. If we do that, and if we invest time, and then time is not a selfish thing, but it's an important, critical part of growth, then we stand a much better chance of implementing the first six habits. So therefore, the seventh habit really is a mechanism to make sure that we sustain the commitment to the first six habits. So that's the way these seven habits work. The first three, once again, are about independence, becoming a better person ourselves, realizing that we can make choices, we are responsible for our own responses, we have a goal, and we manage our time properly, which is the third habit. The other three is about putting it into practice in terms of how we relate to other people. But the most critical thing is that if we want to come back to the first habit and restart again and continuously have the cycle of implementing these habits, the seventh habit becomes the most critical one, to actually invest time to develop and continuously maintain that strength to be able to make those decisions and put into practice those principles that we've covered. So I hope that you've enjoyed this, and just want to mention two things. First of all, if any of you are not on our email list, I think you all are, but if you're not on the email list, please give me your email so that we can keep you up to date with all the other things that take place. Also, we make sure we have your address, because I think when you booked, most of you probably would have given your address, no? Because we will send out to you the CDs of these four courses. Last time it took a bit of time, but we'll get there eventually. Hopefully we'll see you again sometime. Any other questions?
Yes. Did you mention the football game, or just
I didn't mention the football game. I'll tell you what the football game was. No, football game was an analogy that I thought of. I forgot to mention it. You're right. Ah. Football game was this. It was just when people go to watch a football game, right? What's the goal of the game?
To win.
Right, so to score a goal. Right? But actually, no one gets the enjoyment of the goal. Right? What's a good game when you go watch? It's a game where they don't score so many goals. It's a game where the tackling and the process is long and complicated, right? So the process, the journey. Right? When you've won all the goals, the game's over. So the same thing, we have a goal. That's what I wanted to bring up before. A lot of times in life, we think that success means reaching the goal. We do have goals in life, but actually most of our life we actually spend on the journey, not on the goals. Right? And that's just the point I was making before about that the process continuously repeats itself, and that's why there's always more challenges, because it's all about growing. It's not about reaching a goal. Reaching a goal means the game's over. That was just the... Sorry, I forgot to mention that. Question?
Yes. What's the best way to choose a mentor?
Oh, the question was, what's the best way to choose a mentor? I said that the Pirkei Avot, Ethics of the Father, says you have to choose a mentor and make yourself a friend. That's a very good question. There's a couple of different components. What's the idea of having a mentor? First of all, one critical thing about having a mentor is that the person isn't you, so they can be objective, right? That's number one. So it doesn't have to be the world's most righteous person or the world's greatest scholar. It's got to be someone that you can look up to, someone that you value, and someone that you can trust. Right? Someone you can trust. But it's got to be someone who you can trust properly, that even if they tell you something that you don't want to hear, you're ready to hear it, to listen to it. So it's someone who you believe has values, has the types of values that you aspire to, someone that you can trust and someone you can confide in, and someone who then could give you an objective, honest view of things. That's it.
There are very, very few people around that you can do that with, other than rabbis.
Well, I don't know. They must be there. We have to find someone, yeah. That's true. No, it's a hard thing to find, but you have to actually trust the person. Otherwise it's a useless exercise. Yeah. Not necessarily. No, just no. Same. They're just synonyms. I mean, in this context, anyway.
Because a lot of people ask what's the values you have, and then they say, "What principle is that based?" And I'm trying to.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, you could. I suppose it depends how you use the word, but I mean, I just use them interchangeably.
Okay, that's
right. Yeah. Okay.